We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Spinning is Sabonis.
Oh, Miles Turner bringing that smoke.
And now McDermott again, right to the rim with authority.
Brogdon gets around.
Plumford skies high for the jam.
Warren lets it fly.
Yes! T.J. Warren is not human.
Pacer Nation, what's going on? Welcome to our 200th episode of Setting the Pace. Wow, crazy that we're here, but we are joined today doing a little crossover podcast. The sideline guys, Pat Boylan, Jeremiah Johnson. Pat, how's it going, man?
Hey, guys. Appreciate you having both of us, and it's good to be talking with you guys. I think this is my first appearance on the podcast, so yes, I figured after 199, I had seen enough.
JJ, what's going on, man?
Hey, I think I previously said long-time listener, first-time caller, but now I'm, you know, to second or third, probably third or fourth, actually. But congrats on the great work, and I'm honored that you could celebrate such a momentous show by having Pat and I on. Sideline guys, Setting the Pace crossover.
Oh, you wouldn't want to have it any other way, guys.
Yeah, so let's get things started. So obviously, it's been a little bit of a rough stretch for the Pacers. They get things turned around last night against the Pistons. So, Pat, I'll start with you. You know, what did you notice last night in that Pistons game that was different than some of the previous games where the Pacers had struggled?
Well, I thought first and foremost in the first half, you know, they avoided digging themselves into a hole, which I thought was important. Detroit's an interesting team to me because they're 6-19, so by record, they're clearly not very good. But if you look at the teams they have beaten, it's kind of a who's who of the NBA. They've beaten the Lakers. I think the Bucks. They had beaten the Nets, Toronto, Miami. So just about everybody that they had beaten was a good team, including Brooklyn on Tuesday, who the Pacers then lost to on Wednesday and clearly had a struggle in the first half in that one. So I thought first and foremost, just, you know, kind of steadying themselves in the first half was really important. And then in the third quarter, obviously, they started to pull away. I thought it was important to see how they closed the game because Detroit had a couple of runs there. The Pacers were able to stymie them. But ultimately, to me, it comes down to this. When you don't have LeVert and you don't have Warren, a lot more pressure on Brogdon and Sabonis to play well. Those guys are extremely consistent. But it's unrealistic to expect them to play well 100% of the time. And unfortunately for the Pacers, they had a handful of games in a row where they both were struggling at the same time. So Sabonis has a 26-point, 8-rebound, 8-assist game, and still probably not vintage Malcolm Brogdon, but he looked a lot better. 18 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists, and those two playing well, at least while this team is currently constructed as it is, I think is the most important thing. So I think there's no coincidence that the Pacers had not only a win, but what ended up being a fairly convincing win with those two playing a lot better.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, JJ, I know you always have your pulse on the fan base, and we've been overreacting quite a bit lately, but I've heard some people say, you know, Brogdon and Sabonis, maybe they need to be rested for a game or so, but how vital do you think it was to get a win while you could? Because these wins aren't coming easy lately, and getting a win over the Pistons feels like we can maybe, you know, turn the tide a bit. Do you think a win was more important than rest?
Oh, I definitely think a win was the most important thing. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I think we can overreact a little bit to minutes played, although I do think there is some point to saying that Malcolm Brogdon maybe was starting to get a little bit tired, and maybe Domantas Sabonis. But we've seen this his entire career, that he's had weak stretches where he's just had trouble finishing and his field goal percentage has been down, and he's always come back. And I don't know whether that's fatigue or if it's just, you know, defense is concentrating so much to stop him that it affects him, but they had to get a win. I think the thing that stood out to me was Nate Bjorken before the game mentioned that he wanted to see more guys involved and that Malcolm Brogdon and Domantas Sabonis were going to be looking for their teammates. I don't think it was something they purposefully went out and did in that, you know, 5 out of 6 or 6 out of 7 streak where they tried to shoot more or tried to score more, but I think they just felt the pressure that they had to, because, you know, it's catching up to them that they don't have Victor Oladipo or that other dynamic guard. And you also don't have the wing help with TJ Warren. So I think they maybe been trying too hard. And I think they just had to be reminded, you've got to get your teammates involved. Domantas Sabonis is great in the low post scoring, but he's probably even better as a passer. So at the end of the first quarter, to have 11 points, but also to have 5 assists, I thought was really key. And at halftime, Malcolm Brogdon was letting the game come to him. And then when he saw the opportunities, he took advantage in the third quarter. To win, they're going to have to be around 20 points at least per game, Brogdon and Sabonis. But they also have to find their teammates. And that was maybe the most important takeaway, I thought, from the Pistons game.
Yeah, and JJ, I want to come back to you real quick, because last night we saw Bjorken go back to that shorter rotation, just playing 8 guys. And, of course, Goga Batadze was the guy that did not make that rotation in the Pistons game. So throughout the games that he did play, though, I think we're starting to see a steady progression from Goga Batadze. Can you just talk about what you've seen overall from him this season and some of the good things and some of the bad things?
Yeah, I mean, there were times last season where he could maybe score some points, but he got picked on defensively. So that's the biggest takeaway, is that I don't see teams just targeting him, getting him in a pick and roll and getting him out of place and not really in the right spot defensively. So I think whatever they're doing in terms of teaching him the scheme and where he's supposed to be on the court on that end of the floor, that's been a definite improvement. He's always someone who's going to be able to score. And I think that the 3-point shot is something that will come. But to your point about him not being a part of the rotation, I did see a lot of people freaking out, saying, you know, he played great for a week. How is he not in the rotation? And why are they only playing 8? I do think it goes back to, despite the fact that he had been playing well, it's more about the rotation that he had been playing with that you weren't getting as much production out of. And so I think Doug McDermott going into the starting lineup was key to get him more playing with Sabonis, because those two play so well together. And in the second unit, some starters with those 3 bench players. Goga's days will come, but they had to get a win. They had to kind of find the better rotations. And I think what we've seen over the last week is Goga Batadze is someone that you can trust to put on the court virtually in any situation. They wanted to leave him on the court the entire fourth quarter against Philadelphia, and that's a pressure-packed situation. So you know what you have. You'll continue to see growth from him. But just because he doesn't play in a certain game or maybe the next game, I don't think you should freak out. I think you have to be at least pleased with where he is at and the fact that he is developing.
I definitely love what I've seen lately out of Goga. So definitely made a couple great points there. For Pat, you know, we've seen that fifth starter really be like a revolving door. I mean, as JJ mentioned, yesterday it was McDermott that went to the starting lineup, Lamb back to the bench. I love what I've seen out of Jeremy Lamb so far this season, but what role do you prefer to see him in or think that benefits the team? Is it in the starting lineup or coming off the bench?
Well, I think it's still pretty early, and I think you can make a case for both. I think Jeremy Lamb is a top 5 player of the players the Pacers have available right now, but it's kind of interesting timing. Slick Leonard brought this up at halftime a few games ago, that he thought it might be worth giving Jeremy Lamb a try on the bench, off the bench, I should say, going forward. And JJ and I talked about it on our podcast on Wednesday, and then we got to see it come to fruition in that game against the Pistons. The one stat that really stood out to me as it related to Jeremy Lamb was his efficiency, his shooting numbers were pretty good no matter where he was, off the bench or as a starter. But his shots, his attempts per game were way down as a starter. He was taking about four more shots per game coming off the bench. And I'm pro whatever gets Jeremy Lamb more looks. And I think one of the storylines, and I really hope this becomes one of the storylines because it means the Pacers are getting healthier, but I think something we might be talking about closer to the end of the season, if LeVert and if Warren get back, might be, you know, it's challenging to get all five starters going in the same game. We saw small, tiny little blips of it at the beginning of the season before Warren went out. And in a similar train of thought, line of thought, I'm just not sure him with the starting rotation allows him to take full advantage of his abilities. I think with the second group, he's able to be more aggressive. You know, when you got Brogdon and Sabonis on the floor, and then, of course, throw in Turner, Justin Holiday's having a great year, you know, you have to defer to those guys a lot. When he's with group two, he can kind of, you know, shoulder a lot more load as it relates to offensive shot attempts, production. And so I'm not sure it was a coincidence that he goes back to the bench. He takes more shots, scores more points. The Pacers win. I also think McDermott with the starting lineup makes some sense. We know he and Sabonis have a lot of chemistry, and another guy to spread the floor is never a bad thing. So I want to see a bit more of how this goes. He's only played Jeremy, I think, five games off the bench, but I think there is some evidence there that, at least in my opinion, that might be the way the Pacers go. And then also you add in the fact that when you hopefully get LeVert and Warren back, then, you know, Jeremy Lamb has been coming off the bench potentially for a month plus, and he's a little bit more used to that role too, which could be a positive. So I am optimistic in watching what he's done off the bench. And I think that's especially important when you consider that really what's happened is as the Pacers have lost a couple guys to injury, what ends up happening is the starting lineup plucks a couple of guys from the bench, and then it's your second unit that oftentimes bears the bigger brunt of that. So I really like counterbalancing that with throwing Jeremy Lamb with group two.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you there, Pat. I mean, it was just one of those things. The starters weren't clicking. They had a really bad record with Jeremy in that starting five, and then they actually played really well with him off the bench. And, you know, whether it was Sumner starting or whether it was McDermott starting, just having a different fifth starter seemed to be a little bit better for the overall balance of the team. So it was good to see Bjorken go back to that, and it's good to see Jeremy be successful in that role. But, Pat, I got to ask, you know, looking at this Pacers team overall right now, 26 games in, they're at 500, 13-13. They trade Victor Oladipo in the middle of the season to find out about Caris LeVert. Just a lot of stuff has happened in the short season. I'm curious your overall thoughts on this team throughout the whole entire season.
Well, I think it's important to point out, and I'm not sure that this has gotten enough discussion, but I think it's important to point out that I think you do that Victor Oladipo for Caris LeVert deal every single time, because big picture, it gives you a, you know, a 20-point per game potential score, and it gives you the ability to have him for years down the road, which you did not have with Oladipo. And as we talked about on the podcast, frankly, I was surprised that the Pacers were able to get such good value for Oladipo. But I think it's important to note, like, essentially in the short term for a couple of months here, we'll see how long, you've traded Victor Oladipo for nothing as it relates to this team on the floor right now. So that's a pretty tough challenge to come over, especially when you had played a couple of weeks into the season with Oladipo, to then have to adjust to not having him and not having, you know, about 20 points per game that he was giving you. And I'm not sure that challenge has been considered enough. You know, Indiana has one less starter on the floor capable of making those kind of plays. Now, big picture, I think it's a terrific deal. You'll hopefully get Caris LeVert into the lineup. He'll be able to fulfill that role. You'll hopefully have him long term. But what it means for this group in the next month plus, is significant. And that's a really tough challenge to get over. And where this team is right now, look, I think they've got a roster that's better than 500. And I think they're more than capable of playing above 500. And I've, you know, kind of phrased it as, can you do a little bit better than tread water? Right now they're, you know, by definition, treading water at 500. But I certainly think they can. You got a couple of all-star caliber players in Brogdon and Sabonis. And I think the defense stands to still improve. Like, I know we're over a month into the season now, but I still think it's important to note that these guys are playing a pretty different system than they did a year ago. And for those Pacers who have been here longer term, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And that's going to take time to adjust. It's not going to be perfect right off the bat. And so I think this group as currently assembled has the ability to be good. I think when you hopefully get Warren and LeVert back, then I think the group has the potential to be very good, perhaps even great. But right now, I think they can be a team that, you know, hangs around the top of the pack. And I think it's really important. Like, when you hopefully get those guys back, you can't be looking at this big, massive deficit that you have to try to run off, you know, 9 of 10 to close the year to try to get back into the top 4, top 5, top 6, wherever you want to draw the line. This group has to do a good enough job. So if you hopefully get those guys back, that you haven't dug yourself too big of a hole. And I think that's a major storyline of, you know, the first half of the season. Hopefully we'll start to get some more information on LeVert and Warren as the weeks go by. But can this group keep you close enough that once those guys do hopefully come back, you can make some headway? Because I think it's also important to note, like, if Caris LeVert comes back this year, he's going to be coming off, you know, a pretty significant medical condition that involved a surgery. He's never played with this Pacers group before. And then if and when Warren comes back, you know, a pretty significant injury that's going to keep him out a big chunk of the season. This is an NBA 2K21. You can't just plug these guys in and then have them be their typical normal selves. There's going to be some adjustment period there too. So I think it's extremely important to watch what this group does over the next month or so. We'll see if we end up getting a timeline on LeVert or Warren in the next few weeks, but they can't allow themselves to fall too far away from the pack.
Pat, even if LeVert doesn't play this year, I still make that trade 10 out of 10 times. And I really look forward to when LeVert gets on the court. But for now, I know you talked about, you know, the team standpoint, but you know, JJ, what has been your thoughts on Nate Bjorkgren through the first 26 games of the season from a coaching standpoint?
You know, I think that you always have to be paying attention because you never know at what point in the game the zone might come out. I credit Quinn a lot for this because sometimes I'll be logging the game or writing something down and he'll say they're in the 2-3 or they're in a 1-2-2 or they're in a box and one, and it doesn't immediately come to my attention. And so you're not used to seeing things like that from the Pacers. I think the other thing is you expected him to have this positive attitude. And even in the recent, you know, losing stretch, he's been positive. Now, I would kind of love to personally be behind closed doors and to see some of practices like I used to be able to do, just to see if he's getting after them, you know, maybe not publicly, because I think it is important that he has their back. He is supporting the guys at all times, even after difficult games like Milwaukee, for instance. He's been pretty positive, and that's been one thing. And I've had some kind of off-camera conversations with Eddie Gill because, you know, he's played for a variety of coaches, and you know, there's a fine line to walk between always being that sunshine personality when sometimes guys need to be, you know, criticized, or you've got to get after them. And I have no doubt that he is, you know, picking and choosing the right moments for those. But I would just say a little bit unpredictable in terms of the what you see on the court. Now, the rotations, I've been a little surprised. You know, we expected to see, you know, maybe more changes to the starting lineup, not necessarily injury related. Now, we did see that against Detroit. We expected some differences in rotations. I think what he did against Philadelphia was kind of more true to what he has said about going with the hot hand or whoever's working, you know, at that particular time. But we have seen a reliance on the heavier minutes. But then if I really take a step back and I analyze the way the Raptors play, maybe it shouldn't be such a big surprise because they do ride guys like Kyle Lowry when he is playing. He's playing heavy minutes. And they do rely on their stars to do a lot for them. And then they don't do a lot of practicing. And nobody really is practicing a lot right now, I think, in the NBA. But the Pacers are probably, if there's a ranking 1 to 30, I think they're probably in the – top five in terms of the least amount of times they could have practiced, but they decided to not, or they just wanted to give guys a break. And I think the COVID testing also is impacting that, because if you have a practice, you've got to also go through all of those protocols. And so it's stressful and it's tiring. And so I think he's doing a really good job of thinking big picture. And that's the one thing that, you know, fans are always going to be upset not just about a loss. They get upset about a first quarter deficit. So you can't on a Tuesday night in January or February, you're not thinking about the big picture. But I do think he is thinking about that, at least in terms of, you know, not overreacting to a record in February and thinking, you know, you've got to be a home court advantage team. This is a different season anyways, that home court advantage is proving to not be as big of a deal. But if they can kind of feel more comfortable and if they can kind of get confidence for guys to where Warren and LeVert come back, they'll be in a good position. So I think it's been fun to watch. I don't think we really know everything about him just because we've had so little, you know, face-to-face interactions. But, you know, after for the last, you know, 4 to 5 years, kind of knowing what to expect, it has been kind of enjoyable to see the unpredictability.
Yeah, and JJ, you know, I could talk Pacers basketball and all the nitty-gritty stuff with you all day long, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about these commercials, a little bit behind the scenes, get a little behind the scenes, you know, just knowledge from you on these all-star campaign commercials that you have put out. So, first of all, I got to know where you got the jacket, and two, how much fun did you have making those campaign videos?
Well, first, I'll go back to you. I don't know that I've seen too many reviews from the Setting the Pace Twitter account. So do you guys give it thumbs up?
I gave you one. I remember that. I loved it.
I did say on one of the podcasts that it was so cringy that it was great.
Cringy, okay. Well, you know, a lot of infomercials are a little cringy.
Very much. So
if you're going to go and you're going to go for that, I think you've got to go all in. And so that was my biggest thing is when we were recording those. And obviously we did them all in one morning. And, you know, I had very little to do with the writing and things like that. I just had to try to provide some different – you know, levels of enthusiasm. And I'm normally thinking I could just scream and yell like a used car salesman, but there was a different tone required, I think, for each commercial, especially if you watch the Basket Making Basics, then it's almost a little bit of a librarian tone with a wild jacket. But I'll give credit to our fine folks in the Pacers marketing department. Josh Duck is the one that went and found that jacket, and it's similar to one that I have looked for probably in the past during some of the Craig Sager nights. I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to wear that on the air because our boss, Pat and I's boss, VP of Broadcasting, Jamie Burns, I think he likes my sport coats, but he doesn't want it to kind of go too far. So I'm thinking one night for a pregame show, I'm just going to show up because I don't even get to see him anymore. We don't really get to have meetings before the shows. It's just pretty much talking through headsets. I'm going to just show up with the jacket on for the pregame show and see, you know, what he says. But I thought the jacket worked. I thought that, you know, they did a great job of editing those together. And the big thing was I hope the players like them because I think there was some approval from the basketball side, but I'm not sure if they specifically said, you know, hey, Domas, what do you think about, you know, this glass cleaner and what do you think about Basket Making Basics? Because, you know, they're – at some point, the organization has the right to put their own campaign out there. And so, by all accounts, the players do like them. The only bad part was it did seem to coincide with a little bit of a losing streak. So, it was harder to get fully behind them. But I hoped I wasn't to blame for that.
No.
No, we won't blame you. But I got to ask you, Pat, I know we got to get you guys out of here because it's getting close to crunch time for you. But, Pat, what were your thoughts on the JJ commercials? Any critiques? Any thoughts on those?
No, I thought he did an excellent job. I thought, as he said, the jacket sold them. And I will give Jeremiah credit because sometimes it can be tough when you are asked to perform a certain way as a broadcaster. It's almost like you have to put on the actor shoes to do that. And so, like to me, the ultimate compliment for those is exactly what you said. It was a little cringy. Bingo. That's what you're going for. You're going for a little cringy. Yeah. And they were a little cringy. And that's why it worked so well. Because you have to catch attention. Like, it's 2021. You can't just tweet, vote for Domantas Sabonis, hashtag NBA All-Star. You have to find a way to grab people's attention. And so I don't think I have said this to you, Jeremiah, but tip of the cap to you because you definitely caught their attention. So if you want a grade, I give it an A+, especially considering how quickly that came to fruition for you. I don't think you had a ton of time to consider exactly how to put forth an Oscar-winning performance. I think you did a tremendous job.
Well, I appreciate that. And I guess between this podcast and then the actual, the 3 30-second spots, I may have to talk to my agent, who is myself, but I think, you know, wife. If there's any businesses out there, I've got some resume reel material and I think I could be a spokesman. You know, everybody loves Denari and his dogs, but if you want to grab the attention in a different way, this character is available.
Hey, I'm all for it. And, you know, I just have to say, because when you guys were first coming out with your what you guys wanted to be called, I think you were Two Birds Chirping for a little bit. And you guys were talking about what your show should be called. I did come up with the idea of PB&J Squared. I'm still disappointed that one was not the winner. But, you know, you're always PB&J Squared in my heart. But Sideline Guys, you know, it's a great podcast. Want to encourage all of our listeners, if you're listening to this and not listening to the Sideline Guys, you're missing out. And once again, episode 200, thank you guys so much for coming on, being a part of it. And I know it's Friday afternoon, so very busy weekend ahead of us, but thank you guys so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Happy to do it. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, guys.
All righty, Fauci. Well, once again, I want to thank the Sideline Guys for coming on. It's always good to talk with them. And Fauci, you know, any thoughts on what they had to say about this team?
Oh, yeah. I mean, basically, it's like I was saying before, the sky's not falling, but we just needed that W to remind everyone that we're going to be all right. And look, they're in agreement, too. Maybe these guys are a bit tired, but you can't pass up the opportunity to get a win. And luckily, the Pacers did that against Detroit.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I thought they both had really good things to say about the team and everything they've gone through, you know, the Oladipo trade, like I mentioned. And then, of course, you know, trying to get new guys acclimated in different roles. And I think Pat brought it up saying, you know, it's hard to get so many guys going when so many guys are touching the basketball. You know, like Brogdon's got to get his shot. Sabonis has to get his. And putting Lamb back on the bench really balances things. So, I mean, I wouldn't overreact. And that's kind of the whole thing. Like, it felt like the sky was falling from some of the comments we were seeing during those games. And, like, I actually kind of felt good. Like, hey, they're going to come out after a couple of days rested and play well against the Nets. And they just fell flat on their faces. Like, it was just a complete embarrassment the way they came out in that first half. And then once that first half happened, I think that was kind of a wake-up call, because that second half, no, they didn't really ever become close within that game. But only losing by 10, being able to – develop something. Like, in that second half, it was not about coming back and winning the game. It was about establishing a, hey, this can't keep happening anymore. And they had to go into that mode, Fauci, where basically they had to start playing team basketball again, because they had quit playing team basketball.
No, they really did. I mean, the Pacers came out as flat as could be against Brooklyn. I mean, 30 points in the first half, 18 in the first quarter, then 12 in the second quarter. I mean, that was one of the worst first halves of basketball I've seen the Pacers play in a while. But like you mentioned, I think it was about finishing strong. If you see that the Pacers only lost by 10, the game was not close, but it was clearly just about fighting for respect and to get back on the right track. And against Detroit, while the first half wasn't great, the second half very much was. And they pulled away, and it looked like a convincing win. Pacers won by about 16 points. Shot really good from three-point land. They did a lot of things well in that second half against Detroit and that second half against Brooklyn. So it's kind of been a little bit of a rough, you know, start to some of these games lately. So I think we have to put a little bit more emphasis on coming out strong to start moving forward.
Oh, I completely agree. But I do think that whether it was McDermott or Sumner, like, yes, I mentioned McDermott could make sense in the starting lineup. But I also thought Sumner made sense if they wanted to try to keep that bench rotation intact. And I think Pat brought that up as well, just talking about the bench, you know, having Lamb on the bench already. So when the two starters do come back, he's already well acclimated with that group. And that's kind of why I thought, well, Sumner kind of makes sense, because then you have McDermott on the bench getting acclimated with playing with Jeremy Lamb. And those are two guys that are really good scorers, but of course they're not the greatest defenders. So, but anyway, I'm excited the Pacers got a win. It felt good to see them get another W. It had been a while, over a week. And, you know, it had been since the Memphis game the previous week before. So it's just one of those things. 13-13, Fauci, they're fifth in the Eastern Conference, and every team below them has a losing record. So it's not the end of the world. They're probably going to finish in the top six by the end of the season. And, you know, you said it last time, they're going to make the playoffs. So just calm down.
They're going to make the playoffs. I mean, the fact some of these comments on Twitter yesterday were so bad. I mean, people trashing the team, trashing Bjorkman. Alex, we're in fifth place. It's like, oh my God, when did these expectations become this high that we could be without Warren, without LeVert, in fifth place, a game and a half behind third, and all of a sudden this team's no good? I mean, we need time. We're going to get healthy. We're running at like 75% capacity, if that. So get a win when you can do it. You know what? Upcoming is the Hawks and the Bulls. Those are two very winnable games. Before you know it, the Pacers could be right in third place. It's very possible, if not fourth.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And so this Pacers team is completely fine. Sure, they do have their flaws. There are issues with them overall makeup-wise, because last night not playing Goga, while it wasn't necessarily a knock on Goga, I just think, you know, sometimes it's better just to have one lone center out there than two at all times. And, you know, we've seen how productive both Miles and Domas can be playing together, but also playing separately. And it just adds a totally different element to the game. So, sure, you know, I understand people wanting to see Goga develop. I want to see him too out there on the court, and I want to see Sumner out there. Eight-man rotations are a little nerve-wracking, but at last night's, you know, with last night's game, they had to get a win, Fauci. It was not – it was one of those things you could not lose to Detroit.
Exactly.
And heading into this five-game losing streak with a loss against Detroit, who's actually beaten some of the better teams, you just couldn't do that. And then, you know, we've got Atlanta coming up on Saturday. You talked about it off air. Trae Young is a guy that has torched the Pacers the last couple of seasons. It's going to be a tough matchup for Brogdon because of the abilities of Trae Young to shoot from deep, his quickness, his, you know, he's shorter. So I think, you know, Brogdon kind of struggles with shorter, smaller guys that are a little bit quicker. It'll be interesting to see if they put Justin on him. I don't know what they're going to do, but they got to contain him as best as they can. And, you know, I don't know what else to say about that game. Do you have any other comments on that game?
Yes, I mean, you don't want to overlook Atlanta at any point this year, because Trae Young is obviously, you know, one of the more talented scorers in this league. There won't be DeAndre Hunter in this game, which I think is a big news for the Pacers, because he's having a really good sophomore year. But obviously, you still got guys like John Collins, who I wish could have been a Pacer. I know we've talked about that many times before, even one of your recent tweets.
Oh, I'm sorry. Kevin Pritchard probably hates me after this. Keep bringing it up.
I'll never get over that. But, you know, Atlanta, a team that's really not going in the right direction right now. They've lost at least four out of five, I know. Could even be a little bit more than that, but I believe four out of five to be exact. So it's a very winnable game for the Pacers. I think that we can do it. And I just think this is a game that you should not necessarily say I expect to win, but I hope that the Pacers are coming out strong to start in quarter one and can take down the Atlanta Hawks.
No, they definitely have to take care of business. And I think another guy that's going to give them some problems, because we've seen the Pacers have problems with bigs and just defensive bigs and guys that can rebound, is Clint Capella. Now, yes. You know, he's had a really good year this year, and he's, you know, maybe an all-star candidate. I don't know necessarily if he's going to make it, but I think he's in consideration because of how well he's been for this team. And, you know, the Rockets traded him last year basically in a salary dump kind of move to try to get Covington. You know, they were just trying to get off the money, and it just – for some reason, James Harden got tired of playing with people after so many games and whatever. So they ended up trading him to the Hawks. And Clint Capella was okay last year. I think he might have got hurt. I can't really remember. It's been so long ago. And then, of course,
didn't get to play for Atlanta.
Okay, because I knew he was hurt. And then COVID hit, so he probably didn't get a chance. You're right. So, I mean, he's been really good for him. And they've got some, you know, really good talent. They got Danilo Gallinari. They got a veteran player in Rondo on their team this year. So, they have Bogdanović as well. So this is a team that everybody expected. I mean, I remember some people even said they were going to jump the Pacers.
Oh, my God.
I was like, can we just pump the brakes? Like, I just felt like they were the most overhyped team because of Gallinari, Rondo, and Bogdanović. Like, sure, these are good players, but they're not game-changing players, you know. That's kind of probably what Paul George felt like when he thought the Pacers were going to get Anthony Davis, and this is what they brought back to him instead. You know, I'm just saying, because rumor has it was Gallo that was one of those guys that was supposed to be coming back Indiana. But anyway, all I'm saying, like, Gallo's a really good player, but, like, he's not winning you a championship. So, and he's not elevating your team from, you know, the worst team in the Eastern Conference to, you know, a top five seed. That was my biggest case there. It's just like, good grief, people, calm down. But I still like Atlanta. I still think they're good. They've got young players. They've got a good coach. and they've got Nate McMillan. I guess this is the Nate McMillan reunion, something I didn't even think about.
Wow, yes, it is.
So this is the first time the Pacers will get to see Nate McMillan on the sidelines, Fauci. Wonder how he feels about how this new Pacers team looks.
Yeah, hopefully, you know, hopefully we can catch some comments. I'm sure he'll keep it classy. But one thing that worries me, I mean, just when you bring up Clint Capela, one of the best rebounders in the league. The Hawks are one of the best rebounding teams in the league, fourth in the league in total rebounds. So I'm a bit worried about that. So the Pacers have struggled rebounding the ball all year, and not even just this year. It feels like the last few years. So I'm worried about that against Atlanta. But other than that, I mean, Atlanta's pretty mediocre across the board. They're basically middle of the pack team. But they're really not that bad defensively. They're actually giving up less points per game than a little bit more, like a hair more points per game than the Pacers give up and score right around the same. So it's a matchup that I think is going to be a close game. You just hope the Pacers can squeak it out in the end.
Absolutely, Fauci. So, you know, I don't have too much else to say about this, but I did just want to reflect real quick because we are making this a big deal. This is episode 200. So what a milestone. Now, if you actually look at it, we did some mini series when we did the Point Guard Chronicles a couple summers ago, but I don't count those because those weren't full on episodes like we normally have been doing. So this is officially episode 200. Fauci, I just got to say, it's been a lot of fun, man. And I'm really excited. And, you know, just what are some of your favorite moments from the last 100 episodes? Cause I know we kind of reflected on episode 100 about thoughts. So now that we're at 200, what are some of your greatest moments over the past couple of episodes?
I think, you know, just to go off of the last 100 episodes, I think we've talked to some really cool people. I mean, aside from, you know, media members, I mean, having like Thad Young on the team, you know, on the episode and having David West. I mean, it was like a cross combination of David West. I love that those Pacer teams, you know, right around like 2012, you know, being able to chat with him about those teams and then being able to chat with Thad about like the 2017, 2018 Pacers teams. I mean, I love that. I think that's been a lot of fun along the way. I mean, there's been a couple comments here and there that have happened on our episode that have really gotten other people talking about amongst the league and just fans in general. And just, I'm very, you know, appreciative of all of the work that, you know, our listeners have put in of just sharing the episodes, listening to the episodes, critiquing us, all the little stuff to help this show continue pushing forward. That's been some of the most rewarding moments for me, at least.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is if you go back and look, our first episode 101 was A World Without Pacers Basketball. So we hit 101 on March 12th of 2020. Wow. So that was 11 months ago today, and we talked about the suspension and you know how we thought it'd be 30 days minimum. And I mean, that's just so funny to think about how we talked about that. Kind of going through, I thought it was hilarious that one of the episodes, because there was not much talk, we were doing so many different lists on this podcast. I did a recap of the Colts draft on one of these episodes, and you know, just trying to bring up some stuff. But you know, the players have been awesome to have on here. I can't remember if our test was before or after. I think it was before 100.
I think so.
Yeah, but we had Thad Young and we had David West, like you mentioned. Then of course, just the awesome guests like we had on today. JJ and Pat Boylan. You had Howard Beck on your show a couple of different times. We've had Jay Michael from the Indy Star. We've had Tony East from Locked On Pacers, Mark Schindler from Indy Cornrows podcast. You know, it's just really cool to see all the different people we've had on here and really just be able to talk all things Pacers, because at the end of the day, like, that's what it's all about, is just talking about this team, trying to get this, you know, trying to get the listeners feel of how this team looks and what they want to see differently about this team. But yeah, man, it's been a lot of fun. Chris Denari, another one, got to give him a shout out as well. So just love the fact that we've been able to connect with so many different people throughout the last year. And I'm looking forward to seeing who else we can connect with as we go forward.
Oh yeah. I look forward to having a similar conversation for episode 300 when we get there, because Alex, when you and I first linked up, I mean, I don't even think we ever thought 100 episodes was realistic or going to happen. We just did it one episode at a time, and here we are.
Yeah, no, it's funny because I think started this before I got married, and then I got engaged shortly after, and I thought, well, once I get married, I'll probably kind of fade off on doing this. And actually, That's been quite the opposite. I've actually picked it up a little bit more. And,
yes, it has.
You know, the wife is, you know, the wife is supportive enough. I wouldn't say like she's like, oh, my God, I can't wait for you to do a podcast. But she's like, yeah, I know you enjoy doing it. So have fun with it. And, you know, she loves the logo. She loves all the interaction. And, you know, she does get tired of watching Pacer games a lot whenever she wants to watch one of her cooking shows. But, hey, I appreciate her for allowing me to watch most of the games on the big screen TV whenever I'm home. And she doesn't get too mad if I hug the TV. So shout out to the wife, Annie. Just she's, you know, she's part of it. You know, putting your life on hold for podcasts throughout the week can be time consuming, especially with editing and all that stuff.
Oh, of course. I got to give a shout out to Babe right now. I can't tell you how many dinners either go cold or are so delayed because we're still recording going on. So, you know, she's been a great trooper about all this. And, you know, when we first started this, I wasn't even with Babe, and then
wow, now you're engaged.
Here we are now. I'm engaged, planning a wedding that's going to be nearly a year from now. So, you know, awesome. Time really flies at you. And, you know, the Pacers have been there all along the way. So, for that, I'm happy that when you mentioned episode 101 where there was no basketball, whew, Alex, I'm grateful 100 episodes later, there is plenty of basketball.
No, there's no doubt about it. Plenty of basketball. And if you haven't already noticed, we have a brand new logo. So I want to give Charles Martinez, a friend of mine, a huge shout out for the graphic design. I mean, went back and forth with him multiple times, trying to come up with the perfect idea. Absolutely love the design that we came up with. And I know based on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, it was really mixed reactions on which one they liked better. Everybody seemed to really love the new logo, but there was a couple different variations that we weren't sure of. And really, it was kind of like a 50-50 split based on all of the thoughts I got back from Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. So, you know, whatever one you like better, just let us know. Like, it's really cool. And I don't know if you saw or not, but on my page, I did tweet out a sweatshirt of the logo on it. I'm not sure if we're going to sell merchandise or not, but if y'all are interested at all, I know it's towards the end of the podcast. So if you're a faithful listener and you're interested at all and maybe getting some Setting the Pace swag, let me know. We'll figure something out. But other than that, Fachi, do you have anything else you want to say?
No, I will definitely be getting one of those sweatshirts. I think that it looks really cool. And I love the fact that you guys really waited on this and helped us decide what to pick, because Alex and I were torn, and it sounded like everyone else was really torn on this decision. But we couldn't have done it without you guys. Like I said, I'm getting a sweatshirt. So if you guys have any interest, definitely let us know. And thanks for absolutely everything along the way, because if you guys weren't helping us out, I promise you there would be no episode 200.
Absolutely. So 201 will be coming at you more than likely Sunday night, Monday morning, as Fachi will be covering the Hawks game, the Bulls upcoming game, you know, just a lot going on. And we're still in the process of getting on some other big guests for the next 100 episodes. So hopefully we can land a couple of those big guests that we have lined up. And yeah, we'll just, you know, keep you on that cliffhanger there. And thank you guys so much for checking us out. Follow Fachi at @FACCI. I'm at @AlexGoldenNBA. You can check out all of our podcast stuff on Twitter @SettingThePace3 and over on Instagram @PacersTalk. And at the end of the day, Fachi, we've got three words for all of Pacer Nation.
Let's go Pacers.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.